And welcome back to All Things Urticaria, your UCARE podcast. Who are we? We are a global network of urticaria centers of reference and excellence, and I'm here at the UCARE in Berlin. And I'm super happy to have you back for this episode. We're slowly approaching the 100. Imagine that. Amazing. 30,000 downloads, more than 30,000 downloads. So we must be doing something right. Thank you for your loyalty. Please do like us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, tell others about this so that we can increase awareness and knowledge of urticaria. Today, we have something special for you. Special in two or three different ways. Number one, this episode and possibly further episodes on this topic come from three questions that we received, and I will read these questions to you in a minute. But today I have two guests, which is great fun, and I want to say hi to Carolina Vera from our team here in Berlin. Hi, Caro.
Hi, Marco. Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And Johnny is back. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, Marcus. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Of course, the world knows you, Johnny, as a driving UCARE force in Africa and beyond. Thank you for coming back. I remember our last episode. It was great. So I'm looking forward to the conversation we are going to have now. The two of you, you know what we'll be talking about, but our listeners now are probably very curious. All right. Three questions. Yule says, thank you for your podcast. I was offered to participate in a clinical trial. Should I do this? Then Anna says, what are the pros and cons of participating in a clinical study? And Lenny, where do I find clinical trials? How can I find out if I'm eligible and where to participate? So we'll be talking about clinical trials in urticaria, which is very exciting because over the last years, we have more and more opportunities for patients to participate in clinical trials globally, for sure. And that's why it's good that we have you, Johnny, from South Africa, and you, Caro, from our very own UCARE clinical trials team here. Maybe you'll start with Johnny telling us a little bit about your experience with clinical trials, specifically in urticaria. I remember some where you participated. What is your connection to clinical studies in urticaria?
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, we in South Africa, you know, we one of the first urticaria care centers in Africa. And one of the things that we really battle with still ongoingly is some of the new and exciting treatments for urticaria, many of which are standard of care internationally, we are still struggling to access for various cost reasons. And so sometimes we are quite often left with treatment destitute patients. We've got patients suffering with terrible urticaria and we can't access treatment for them. So that's, I guess, the first thing, you know, being an ambassador for trying to get some of my patients access to these amazing new treatments in urticaria. That's been my first kind of driving force. But I guess, and also related to that, I think, you know, I am primarily also interested in the science of urticaria. And I think it's a fantastic time in urticaria to have all of this development. And I think that, you know, we really, as scientists studying urticaria, I think we learn so much from seeing new molecules and understanding them. And the more and more treatment options we have for patients, I think this really just enriches what we can do. And there's so many subgroups of urticaria as well that I think that, you know, as we advance with trials, and that's the only way we progress in knowing what drugs need to work and should work and should be applied to different groups of people. So that's really the two main places that I come from in terms of interest and conduct of clinical trials.
Yeah, you know, I share both of them very much because only knowledge will bring us better drugs, and drugs in turn will teach us about the disease and new aspects, new targets, new approaches to helping patients with this. Caro, you come from a more practical side. I don't know how many studies you've participated in. You see study patients every day.
A lot. So at the moment, we have ongoing about six clinical trials for urticaria with different groups of drugs and different patients and patients that have tried everything before they come here. And drugs like OMA didn't work, or they didn't do the work completely, and they say like, I'm desperate, I need help, what else can I do, you know?
For sure. And in Johnny's case and in many other settings, it is the unavailability of drugs. But in our setting, it is mostly, yeah, the drugs we have are not working, and yep, we need to figure out how to help these people anyway. And then these clinical trials become an excellent opportunity, of course, to try something that is more effective. No, that's the reason why people do clinical trials. They think they have something that works better than what we already have. And that should also be a motivation for patients to join. Caro, you said 6 clinical trials. I think not all of them in chronic spontaneous urticaria. I think it's very important to also study chronic inducible urticaria. Mm-hmm. But how do you, when there is more than one study, inform patients about the possibility for them to participate and maybe guide them as to what is better?
So we talk to them a lot in the consultation, and by asking the questions, what's your main problem? Is it the itch? Is it it's always the chronicity of the symptoms, how often do you have to take medication? Sometimes they come to us with a 4 dose antihistamines, and they say, I don't want to take 4 tablets a day, or I don't want to get an injection. So depending what the patient says, then we say, okay, look, there is this trial, it's with tablets, you only take 1 tablet a day, it's placebo controlled or not, but then you get to talk with the patient and what they are, what they like. No, we have patients that say, yeah, I don't want to try OMA because that's an injection. I want something that I can take orally. And then by talking to the patient, we discuss which one could be the better option.
Very good. Very good. Maybe we take a step back, Johnny, and talk a little bit about those who have not had experience with clinical trials. Some of the basic features of a clinical trial. How is it different to be treated within a clinical study versus by prescription or by buying the drug in the pharmacy?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, because I think it also speaks to some of the pros and cons of clinical trials. Yeah. And I think that a clinical trial environment is a more focused, more sort of very detailed and very specific environment. And so I think the starting point for people to know is that they're going to get a lot of information. And it's part of what we need to ensure that when a drug is not approved and available on the shelf, that we're using it in a way that allows us to monitor carefully any side effects or things that develop. And I think it's important as well for people to realize, I think, that in the pipeline of a new drug development, drugs move from a lot of sort of in vitro work and animal work. We make sure it's safe there. Then we go to some safety studies we call phase 1 in healthy volunteers. We again checking primarily for safety. And then we go usually into slightly bigger numbers of people in what we call the phase 2 section. And, you know, that looks at both safety and a small start of looking at what we call efficacy. How good does the drug work? And then finally, in a larger group of people, a couple of thousand people, we look at phase 3 or how effective is this? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the kind of things for people to be aware coming in. And then I think what people do need to be aware is that, usually in most clinical trials, there's an initial visit, which is long, where we will explain in detail and discuss the pros and cons of that specific drug and also the requirements of that particular study. And I think patients with urticaria need to be aware that in a trial environment, we will do more things than you would do necessarily under ordinary circumstances. You know, a lot more monitoring. They might need to fill in diary entries and these kinds of things. And then, but the important thing is at the very start, we in a trial will lay out very clearly what that process is. Do you know what I mean? When you'll come to the clinic, how long that will be, and in some ways, right from the start, people can get to make, and that's all part of what we call the informed consent process, which is really the critical starting point for any clinical trial. And I think that's the kind of aim, and also in that we'll also get to hear the duration. So you'll get told how long will this study go on, how many visits will we have, And then I think that, you know, from there on, you normally get sort of screened, and there'll be some requirements often for getting. I guess that's another thing people sometimes think is the moment they sign a consent, they'll definitely get onto the study. Sometimes that's not the case, unfortunately. There are patients that will not have enough disease severity or some other peculiarities. And then normally what happens is they'll go back to their standard treatment, treating doctor, or maybe could try for another study. Yeah. But once they're on a study, then they tend to follow that very pre-specified schedule. And I think one of the things that happens in our setting is that we have very, you know, sometimes very limited clinical contact with people. So one of the things some of my clinical trial patients say is, aside from all of the medicines that they're getting and the potential benefits of that, they really enjoy the extra clinical contact.
Yeah, the extra care.
The extra care that they get, you know, and that's good. I mean, I guess on the flip side of that, I've also had people saying, why do you make me fill out all these, you know, reams of details and kind of why won't you leave me alone? But I think that, you know, that's the sort of phase. And then normally a trial will come to an end then they will go in. And I don't know if you want to add something to that, Caroline. You might have a different experience in Europe.
Yeah, actually, so by the patients here say the same thing. So they're happy that when they join the study, we see everything. No, we go, we take blood, we liver, and sometimes we do some more controls that they would actually do when they are in a normal consultation. And oh, I would not figure that out if I were not here in the study. And when they finish, they're like, can I start another study? I like the system, let me stay here.
That's not uncommon, no, that patients who participate in a clinical trial, because a clinical trial has a start and an end, and the whole idea of doing clinical studies is to develop medicines that then become available in real life, in the clinics. And so, yeah, we do have patients who enjoy the experience. And because urticaria can be very long-standing, we all know that, you can be affected for years and years and years. Patients go from one protocol into the next. Maybe a good time to talk a little bit, you already touched on it, Johnny, about being able to go into a clinical study, the need to fulfill certain criteria, and at the same time, not have something that would preclude inclusion into the study. You know, we call it in and exclusion criteria. Can we talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, I think it's really important because I always sort of, when I am counseling people when I'm just seeing them as a clinician and counseling them about whether they should, you know, are they interested in the clinical trial and whether they should, you know, try to participate in one, I always mention this issue of inclusion exclusion, because certainly we do have patients that are very excited for a trial, and then for, you know, either usually it's the disease is not active enough or severe enough. That's usually some disease severity marker. And I think that's important because most studies, especially studies trying to, like phase three, trying to look at how effective the molecule is, well, we need to have a starting base that's severe enough so that we can assess that. And then the other thing that we sometimes have is, you know, drugs will have particular safety profiles, and then some people with certain other diseases will be excluded. So for instance, you know, if a drug is working through the liver, often people with liver diseases or like hepatitis or something like that would be excluded. And, you know, in South Africa, we have high rates of hepatitis, and we actually have to deal sometimes with situations where that will be the first time we pick up hepatitis on a patient. And of course that will unfortunately exclude them. But it's important another thing I guess to add just in the very introduction is that every time you set up a trial, that trial's got to go through several regulatory approvals before it gets to the patient. What's good is in every country and every site that runs it will have to take it to their regulatory authorities. And I think what's good about that is that each regulator and each local ethics committees will think about issues related to that. So, you know, I'm mentioning this hepatitis issue, our ethics committee is really attuned to that. And so when we have studies like that, we talk about what would happen if somebody got hepatitis and how we would talk them and help them actually. So again, in a way, it's even though the person would have the disappointment of not making it onto the trial, we would make sure that their care is looked after. And some of those aspects are really carefully thought about. And as an investigator, when you start, I'm sure it's the same everywhere. When you start, you have to often do a lot of justification back and forth. The ethics or the regulator really asks a lot of questions of how have you thought about this problem or that problem. And I think that for patients coming on to trials should really be reassuring. Yeah. That these things have gone through that. And so by the time it reaches a person, really a lot of people have scrutinized it and given it a lot of thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said earlier, none of what happens in a clinical trial happens without patients knowing what is going to happen and agreeing to what is going to happen. And at any point in any study, patients can say, you know what, I don't want to continue. And that's it. That's the end of it. No, there's no obligation ever to go into a clinical trial or to stay on the clinical trial. I think that's very important. I think we have time for one more question. I think we need to talk about the P word, Caro, placebo. Patients are often, you know, they say, well, I don't want to be a guinea pig, you know. So placebo means that many trials use treatment that looks like, tastes like, is applied like the active drug that is being tested, that is being investigated in the clinical trial. What can we say about that, Caro?
So for the urticaria patients, we always said, look, there is a risk that you get placebo, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to get any medication. But because throughout the study, you also have a basic medication in most of the cases is antihistamines. So you are getting the standard medication and you're going to be followed. And for most of the trials, at some point, if you receive placebo, at some point you got over and you get the medication. No? And it's like, okay, let's just wait and see the first 12 weeks or however longer this fase is. But after that, you are going to get the chance to get also this new drug.
Yeah. What's sometimes puzzling for patients is that they don't know what they're getting for a certain period of time, but we also don't know. So we sort of draw an envelope from a pocket that says you will get placebo. But we don't know what's inside that envelope. And that's good because we don't want to influence by knowing whether patients get the real drug or get something that looks like the real drug. We don't want to influence their experience. No, there are high expectations. Of course, here's someone who has a great idea, starts to develop a new drug, makes it available in the clinical trial. Everyone is excited. We are excited, patients are excited, but we want to know the true effects of the drug without being influenced by these expectations.
I think it is a burden of clinical trials, the risk of placebo. But I would say that, you know, as clinical trial study designers, drug regulators, increasingly people are thinking about this issue much more. And so, like what you were mentioning, Caroline, like the way that trials are being designed are trying to minimize that problem as much as we can, as you can. So, you know, you might have different ratios, so not, you know, of all the people on a trial, three will go into active treatment and one to placebo.
Correct.
So that decreases your chance. And then, like you saying, what we call crossover, that like sometimes people will then have either, you know, other people will share the burden, or for instance, patients will then, everybody that's had placebo will get an active drug later on. So I think that although it is absolutely a burden and something for patients to consider, I think increasingly we are trying to do that. And Marcus, I mean, some of you can comment on this. Some of the more recent chronic urticaria follow-up trials have also had very clever sort of designs that in try to incorporate the fact that we see natural remission of chronic urticaria in some patients too. And so patients are being allowed to go stop the drug, and then we're waiting. And then if they do develop active disease again, they then can go back and access the drug. And then these are some very clever designs, I think, that are trying to allow for both the natural history of the disease and also to minimize placebo risk and exposure.
Absolutely. And it's really a lot of smart people and knowledgeable people who contribute to how these trials are being designed, which includes patients. the trials, the design of the trial is first discussed with patients. What do you think? What, how can we improve? How can we make it more patient friendly? I think that patients who are offered participation in a clinical trial should seriously consider this as an opportunity for themselves, and in the end also a chance that they contribute to the development of better drugs that can then be brought to the world. It's an important aspect for me as well. This was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun, and I'm looking at the time, and I wonder where these 20 minutes have gone. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. We will leave it at that. We have plenty of questions to answer. If you guys want to be back for round two, I'd certainly love that.
Definitely, I think we should have that, yeah.
There you go. Okay. People out there, this is all the time we have today. We thank Caro from our UCARE here in Berlin. We thank Johnny from the UCARE in South Africa. Thank you very much, guys, for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Super. And we thank you, loyal listeners, for staying to the end of this episode of All Things Urticaria. Do remember, we'll be back. So watch out for the next episode to come soon. Please remember, if you haven't listened to all of the previous episodes, well, that's for you to do and to provide feedback. We love your questions. Keep them coming. And as you can see from this episode and further episodes to come, we do take them seriously. We do bring them on board so that we answer with this format, with this podcast, your questions. Please support us by liking and leaving comments on the platform where you download your UCARE podcast. And please also enjoy the other formats of the UCARE Level Up and For You program, our videos, our journal clubs, all of the things we do to increase awareness, knowledge, and education on urticaria. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you too for joining us today, and have a great time. We will be back soon. Bye-bye.